So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review me.
Let's ask the question, all right, that every American who's seen wrestling matches asks.
Go ahead.
Do you guys know who's going to win before the match starts?
Well, I can tell you right now, I made the statement before. Every time I got beat by a better man. I don't know what goes on throughout the entire world of wrestling, I can't say, but what I will say, they overmatch. You never see a Hulk Hogan up against a Ric Flair. You never see a Bruno Sammartino against a Hulk Hogan. They know now probably David Schultz can whip my tail, so if I go in with David Schultz, he'll just beat me when he can. And let me tell you something, this guy's trying to knock wrestling, but people are still calling, because I got to wait a minute, boy.
And that was from promoting.
All right, now listen to this. I've got a number right now, 1-900-909 for Lou, and over 125 to 150,000 people a month call me on my line, and David Fagnoli right there is the coordinator of that show. On WrestleMania Day, 278,000 people called the line. So the influence is there, and half foot morons like this with the brain of a dehydrated BB, yeah, if they put his paper.
Welcome to Reveal Way. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting coming at you on this Wednesday. And Mr. Ting, we are now the post-WrestleMania hangover. We had, what a weekend.
Oh my God, what a weekend. What a, you know what? It happened so quickly that it almost feels like it didn't happen at all.
Remember when you almost forgot your passport on the Friday morning?
Yeah, now I do.
Thank God I reminded you the day before.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for doing that. I mean, it would have been terrible if we forgot and didn't go on this trip.
You know what was slightly concerning to me was on the Wednesday night before we flew out on Friday, right? So on Wednesday night, I'm packing and I'm going through and realizing I have all my stuff printed out that I need for our hotel and everything, that credentials, and I suddenly realized, I was like, I don't have anything for our flight. So I go in, because Porter always sends out an email with your confirmation number and the fact that you have your flight. So I looked up when I had purchased our flight, and I go back into my email, and there is no confirmation sent by Porter.
Really?
I have it charged on my bill, but I have nothing from Porter Airlines confirming our flight.
Mm-hmm.
Slightly concerned here. I ended up having to call them.
You did all this prior to the flight?
Well, I didn't do this after the flight, because I was worried we wouldn't get on the flight.
I mean, how much, like, just hours before the flight? Like, or the day
the Wednesday
before?
Night.
Oh, the Wednesday night, okay.
Yes. Before. So I called them.
So last Wednesday?
Yes, last week.
Yep.
2 days before we flew out.
Yep.
And I contacted them, they picked up, and thankfully we were in the system. And they sent me a confirmation email. I didn't even know what time our flight was on Friday.
Wow, how could they do that?
I'm just glad I did check with this, and all was fine.
Yeah, we made it onto the plane. We got to a beautiful, Newark? New Jersey?
Beautiful Newark, two words that have never been used together.
It's marvelous town. Just, you know, the moment you get there, you could just feel the WrestleMania hysteria in the air that we were breathing in. From that river.
What was your highlight of the weekend? Is there one particular moment or match or event?
Certainly, it was really great to meet all these people. But I have to say, my one highlight, we met this guy who was just like, you know, this regular person, didn't look like a wrestling fan. This older gentleman.
Oh, yeah, this guy.
Yeah, this older gentleman didn't look like a wrestling fan at all.
Marty? Is that his name?
I think so, yeah. And, you know, I just, like, I'm standing there, I'm in line at the A&W, and all of a sudden this guy turns and he's like, Bidet, B-I-D-E-T.
What a troll he is.
I know, I'm like, oh, shit, wow.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
That's it. That was intense. Like, yeah. The guy was wearing a fucking suit.
Yeah. I couldn't believe that either.
Unbelievable. I couldn't bidet what was happening.
No, that didn't work.
It was a fun weekend, though.
What was your highlight?
Wow. I've got to say, the Hall of Fame was pretty cool.
Yeah? How'd you do in your Bruno pool?
I was...
Were you surprised by the
I couldn't believe what happened after putting all this emphasis into this contest. I was like, is this going to be really something dramatic that we're watching this and be like, how long will he go?
Yeah.
And then, of course, the way the speech played out, it was like, wow. I was so glad we did the contest.
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't believe it either. Actually, I was pretty interested when you're timing it the whole time.
Did I look weird?
Yeah, you look like, I mean, I think we saw some glances of people around us who were just like, what is this guy doing?
The worst was Saturday afternoon as I'm getting ready and Wei is like, why are you putting on a tie? And I said, did you not read our credentials?
Oh, yes.
That it's a formal attire that we have to wear. And you were like, I didn't pack any formal attire. I'm just going like this. I was like, Wei, you got to look semi dressed up here for the Hall of Fame. It says it on our credentials.
Yeah.
And you were like, well, why didn't you tell me this like last Thursday?
Yeah. So basically I had to go and make a tie.
You were going to wear your Kyan tie shirt to the Hall of Fame.
No, I didn't pack that, but I didn't think we needed to dress up. We'd never really had to before. So basically I had my dress shirt and I had to make a tie. So we went around the hotel just looking for fabric. Eventually, yes. We found a long sheet of linen.
And you know what you nicknamed it? Look, John, it's my Kyan tie.
Oh, fuck.
And then after Raw Monday Night, Wei was like after the podcast, okay, no talking for 24 hours. I'm tired of you, Paul.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
But it was a fun weekend overall.
Oh, very monumental. Memorable.
You know what I like knowing was, yes, we've never skipped a review away. So it was going to be tough to do one this week. Uh-huh. So I was really glad when we picked this to review last week. The Morton Downey Jr. Show, a show that I had watched a decade ago. I actually ordered during my eBay craze. There was someone had put together all these pro wrestling like news stories on like the A Current Affair and what we reviewed during the Geraldo. Someone had put like 8 of these onto one VHS for like $10. Wow. And I was curious, so I bought it. And this was one of the shows that was on it. So I remember seeing it then and remember it being a train wreck. You, though, on the other hand, had never heard of this.
No.
And got to watch this with fresh eyes.
I didn't really have any expectations. I mean, I guess, the most I was expecting was another version of the Donahue show that we reviewed a couple weeks ago. But what we got, though, it was like that. But I think that Donahue show taken to an even bigger extreme of trash TV.
Like, Donahue was at least at the bottom of this, I think, was actually trying. Obviously, it's a talk show. We want it to be as entertaining as possible. But I felt like we were at least trying to get some news out of this. Some serious. Because these are very serious topics.
Yeah.
This was just absolutely, there was zero attachment to any kind of journalism of all. This was just designed to be a fucking sideshow, and thus it delivered.
This was pro wrestling.
It was. Honestly, with, I would say, the exception of one guy not realizing what he had stumbled into. Perhaps.
That was the best part.
Jim Wilson.
Yeah. The best, like, you know, the reason why I think shows like, you know, the Ali G show and like Tom Green are so successful, or any of these shows, is just you take a completely unrealistic situation and you put real people in there. And that's what Jim Wilson was on this episode of the Morton Downey Jr. show.
Now, for those that have not seen this episode or this show to begin with, how would you describe the Morton Downey Jr. show?
Well, wrestling fans would be familiar with him, obviously, from WrestleMania 5, which we reviewed last week. He is the smoking talk show host. I was obviously, you know, you and I were both probably too young to really witness his prime. But from the sounds of it, he was one of the original shock jocks on the radio. And after that fizzled out, he moved on to TV. And it sounded like this show was quite successful prior to this, I mean, it seemed like it got canceled in 1989, which is the same year that this aired.
Coincidence, I'm sure it was.
Maybe there. Some. But, you know.
I always confuse this guy. I always thought him and Robert Downey Jr. were somehow related.
I did too. I mean, how many Downey Juniors could there be?
I don't know. Where are the Downey Seniors?
Well, this guy's dad was some type of a singer, Morton Downey Sr.
Well, I don't think Morton acquired those skills.
Right. So basically, he has a talk show, and I think, you know, it's very much the norm to us these days. Like, you know, you mentioned Jerry Springer, or you mentioned Geraldo, it's just, or Maury Povich, it's just trash TV. But I think this guy was one of, if not the originator of that style of trashy talk show, where he would just basically bring people on and encourage arguments.
Yeah, he certainly, that seemed to be his MO, was just simply goad guys into contradicting them, or not even contradicting, but just arguing with them and playing the devil's advocate to any point that was made. Sure. And just eliciting a reaction, which really required nothing for the likes of Lou Albano or your favorite, Dr. D. David Schultz. Yeah.
But, I mean, I would say even more so than anybody we see on TV these days, because this guy was a full-on character. Always had a cigarette with him. Like, always smoking.
He's smoking right here
TV,
in the studio.
Which I don't even know if is legal anymore on national TV. And he would just blindly, like, his audience, you know, would obviously get very riled up during in the middle of these debates. And he would just tell the audience, "Shut up!" Which I thought was awesome.
Shut up. There's a part of me that wishes this show is still around.
Oh, yeah.
Or at least a show like this. So anyway, it's a whole hour dedicated to professional wrestling and kind of tackling two subjects within this. Homosexual advances and racism in wrestling. Certainly topics that we can cover in 45 minutes.
You say tackling like any real intent of, you know,
okay,
uncovering the truth.
Putting the subject up and taking bats and attacking it.
Pretty much.
We're
yeah.
more their method here. It kind of just started off. I don't know if like part one was just kind of cut up or something.
Yeah,
this is
available on YouTube, and unfortunately, I think the first few seconds of this were eliminated. But you get the gist.
Yeah, we are introduced to Dr. D. David Schultz, and
who people will remember from the John Stossel attack.
Yes, on 2020 on ABC, which was a very controversial segment within wrestling at the time because of them trying to, you know, it was the is it real, is it fake debate. And Jim Wilson was a part of that segment. And as a result, Jim Wilson was pretty much excommunicated from professional wrestling. And he had written this book. It was years after this show, called Chokehold. And I've actually read the book. It's pretty thorough when it comes to you know, his criticisms of the NWA and being a monopoly, blackballing people, which actually resulted in a federal case. And with Wilson, he believes that he turned down the advances of a promoter, Jim Barnett, and as a result, he was blackballed from wrestling because of it. And a lot of other people would argue that this guy was just not a very good wrestler, and he just wasn't a draw. And that was basically the setup here, was that the wrestling world hated Jim Wilson at this point because of him being so forthcoming to the public about the intricacies of wrestling and the behind the scenes, which was very clouded in secrecy at the time in 1989. And Wilson came on here, I think, trying – I don't know. Part of me is always looking at these guys that they're always working some kind of angle, even a Jim Wilson.
Yep.
But he tried to be the most normal here on the show, whereas the others were just outrageous caricatures that were here, such as David Schultz, who we start the show off where he's just cutting promos here on Wilson about saying...
This guy here, Wilson. First thing, I never heard of you, never heard your name before you went on some news show and come out saying that wrestling's fake and all this and that somebody wanted to make love to you or some man or something. Well, see, I've never had that problem. You say it goes on everywhere. I've never had that problem with a man. Man never come up and ask me nothing because I had plenty of women. Now, I've been in wrestling 15 years. No promoter ever made love to me or tried to make love to me or asked me for sexual favors. I think you're a liar. I think you're a liar and you want publicity. That's all you want. I don't think you can play football. I don't think you can wrestle. I don't even think you should be out here. I think you're just somebody that wanted to come up here and say, I'm a professional wrestler. There's 1,000 people out here, 100,000 people who want to get in the limelight. And you say, you come out and say, first thing I want to know, what gives you the right to even be out here? Have you ever beat anybody? Have you ever
been answer?
I don't even know.
Answer, man. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, number one, because of my sexual persuasion, and the fact
I never got any gay advances because I got plenty of women. And he's just, it was just, no promoter ever made love to me and calls Wilson a liar, says, I don't think you can play football. I don't think you can wrestle. And he's keyed as a Dr. D. David Schultz, pro wrestler slash bounty hunter, which was his current job because this guy was actually blackballed from the industry as well. And that's why he had gotten to his, I guess his second love of bounty hunting. Bounty hunter. It's like an actual profession.
He's like Boba Fett. I find him so intriguing. I've never seen one of this guy's matches, ever.
If this guy had been facing Alberto Del Rio this past Sunday, 3 million buys.
Oh, no doubt. I've never seen any of his matches, but I feel like I know him like he's my best friend. Because, man, what a promo this guy can cut, especially outside of the wrestling circle.
And if people watch this show and get, listen, he says some horrendously offensive material throughout this show. Yeah. I can't take any of it seriously. This, to me, was this guy just playing his character to the absolute tilt. He was a racist redneck on this show.
And I don't necessarily doubt that maybe, you know, he's probably very much like this in real life.
Yeah, probably. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know the guy.
I just find it so amazing, though, that we get to see this entire episode where fictitious characters, or at least like incredibly exaggerated characters, can interact with real life people.
And the crowd is just like, yeah.
This crowd like,
they
was something
are a
else.
Bunch of idiots. I don't want to paintbrush people, but I'm going to paintbrush every one of these members of the studio audience is just fools.
So, you know, Jim Wilson starts to say, you know, because my – like, was Wilson homosexual?
Or no. No.
Okay, because Wilson says at some point he's like – you know, due to my lifestyle choice, you know, I was susceptible to these. And then Dr. Schultz or David D or Dr. D basically says, "Are you gay? Are you gay? Did you hug him? Did you kiss him on the neck?
Are you?"
There's no filter on this man at all.
Wilson comes back with, "Do you know what a booker is? Do you know what a booker is? Do I know what a booker is? Did you ask me about a hooker? What?" He just refused to answer anything and just was able to turn everything around back to Wilson.
It's just like
being a failure.
It's so amazing. I mean, because, you know, with kayfabe broken now, it's just the norm to you and I and to anybody else to just consider wrestling as, you know, a performance art, staged, scripted drama. But to see these people so defiant about it being real at this time,
they were just clinging here.
Is incredible.
Yeah, 1989, it was still such a – I mean, it was earlier that year that Vince McMahon had gone in front of the commission in New Jersey because they didn't want to be taxed as a sport and said, we're not a sport. And there were people at that time who thought this is the death of wrestling. Yeah. This guy has just outed what the industry's greatest secret is. And
the industry did even better than it ever did afterwards.
But anyway, and that would actually be brought up later on in the show. But oh yes, of course, Morton Downey starts quizzing Jim Wilson. What is it? What is a blade job?
Now, and tell me what the hell that has to do with what the topic is.
Well, that was also part of the 2020 piece. Was that one of the people that they interviewed on there, Eddie Mansfield, demonstrated to them how they get blood, and he cut himself. So that was also a big revelation at the time, was these guys cut themselves to get blood.
But what does that have to do with Jim Wilson's allegations about the homosexuality and all that?
Well, it allowed Morton Downey to say, I've got to say blade job, because after what we've been talking about, I don't want you to think I'm asking about another kind of job. Yeah. It was... Then we were introduced. Apparently, just anyone in the crowd could just show up and magically appear and get time on television, including very well-known independent promoter in the Northeast, Dennis Coraluzzo, who gets up and calls Wilson a jobber who makes excuses, and he attacks the agenda of Wilson and says, "Who cares? Is anyone going to stop watching?" And Coraluzzo, I think, was here strictly to try and put together a match. This guy actually was featured on Raw years later when Jim Cornette did the NWA Invasion that nobody remembers, probably, with like Bart Gunn and Bob Holly and Dennis Coraluzzo and Howard Brody were brought into the ring to present the NWA Championship to, and they had Dan Severn. And so Dennis Coraluzzo, that was his big, at least on the national scene, his one big moment of fame, but a longtime promoter in the Northeast.
Yeah, you mentioned that anybody could, you know, from the audience could come up there and talk, and it, but it did seem like this whole audience was comprised of one type of person, and that was, you know, people that are wrestling fans that are here to also defend the business and attack Jim Wilson. That's what it really felt like. It felt like this whole audience was just against this guy.
It was just like, yeah, every single person, it was just jumping on top of Jim Wilson here and attacking him.
But to get back to that blade job, when they asked Dr. D if he's ever done a blade job, he says, he's never used a blade or anything else. I've never seen a blade used, and I can make you bleed with my hands in less than 10 seconds.
Well, we then went to the phone lines. And who is going to join us by phone, Way?
A random caller from I don't know, a small town?
Paul E. Dangerously, listed below as pro wrestler. He's on the phone to offer his advice on whether Jim Wilson was blackballed and why.
Paul, can you hear me, buddy?
Yes, I can, Mort.
Paul, let me ask you a question. You've been listening to this stuff.
Yes, I have.
All right? You listened to Jim Wilson's life story. What do you make of his statement that he was basically blackballed from wrestling?
Jim Wilson was blackballed from wrestling, and that is the truth, and I'll tell you why right now. Because he was such a loser, he never drew a dime in his life, and nobody ever wanted to pay to see him.
And says the reason is because he's a loser who never drew a dime. And it doesn't matter who you are, if you don't draw, you won't get on television. And then they go to break, and Morton Downey Jr. says, next up, we're going to be joined by the world's strangest man.
Ugh, the world's strangest man, while showing footage of a weightlifter. The world's strangest man.
Ted Arcidi, who at the time was known as the world's strongest man, but yeah. Whatever.
They've never called Mark Henry that for some
reason. That's a gimmick that hasn't been done. The world's strangest man.
World's strangest man. Well, he is strange.
Might be David Schultz.
Yeah, well, I mean, no, you got to give it to him. Like, that guy, he does look strange.
Well, he looked strange amongst these people. They came back, and we didn't go to our CD for a while. First, they introduced Claude Thunderbolt Patterson, who was a very well-known name, specifically in the Georgia territory throughout the 60s and 70s and into the 80s. And he was on the show, essentially blaming promoters for him not reaching the top of the business, saying in his best year he made $100,000, which Downey believes was a very fair amount of money. And Patterson always felt that he was held back because of the color of his skin, and he could have headlined and made top dollar in the industry and never did. And he blames racism for that fact, and had walked out of territories in the past. And they ended up, he starts getting into a shouting match with Schultz as well.
Immediately. This guy, like, David Schultz is just listening to this. And just within seconds, just bursts. Like, he's just waiting to explode. And he certainly does. He gets into angry wrestler mode and cuts a promo immediately. And, of course, a shouting match ensues. It's highly entertaining.
You can barely hear stuff at this point. It's just shouting matches. Then Ted Arcidi is introduced. He starts complaining about Patterson. And
hold on a second. One of David Schultz's arguments is that you blew it. You blew your chance. Terry Funk beat you in less than a minute.
Yeah. And they brought up this. Like, this was like just a checkmate move by Schultz where he said, Or no, it was one of the, it was actually one of the fans, I think, who brought this up maybe when they took questions, but was saying how you gave up, you left, you could have been on top of the industry if you stuck around and you beat the world champion. And Patterson refused to say what wrestling was and what it wasn't, and he had no comeback for this.
It's amazing.
It's like you could have beaten the world champion in the middle of the ring, and there would have been no racism that could have stopped you from beating another man in a legitimate contest. And Patterson had nothing to come back with.
It's so weird. It's so weird that, you know, this guy had a real case, or at least in his mind, he had a real case for what he was arguing against, yet he still wouldn't break that rule to make it.
Yeah.
You know, he cared more about protecting this sham than...
And Patterson and Jim Wilson, they actually worked together for the Georgia Championship Wrestling Territory together. So they had actually worked together, not only in wrestling, but also worked together trying to start a union. And so at least Jim Wilson had an ally here. Ted Arcidi then starts bringing up names like Tony Atlas, Rocky Johnson, and Special Delivery Jones.
Oh, superstars.
Yes, Special Delivery Jones.
Yeah, main eventers.
Yep. And he brings up all those names. This was this would have been, what, like 2 years before Tony Atlas became a Saba Simba, which I don't know if that would have been the best
that's not racist.
Supporting evidence that a black man can make it without racism in this industry. And Patterson shuts off Arcidi by saying, "Listen here, muscles. Listen here." And then this man storms onto the stage, and it's hard to tell who this is, but this was...
But you could tell this was a character.
Oh.
Like there was no normal person appearing on this show.
This was out of some like vaudeville play or something. Yeah. This old man with a hat coming on, storming on, and it was Tony Altomare, who was Captain Lou Albano's longtime tag partner, just comes on to the... onto the stage and talks about shaking Patterson's hand in the locker room, and then Patterson wants to shake his hand. This is just a complete circus at this point with all these workers, but, like, hitting a 15 on a scale of 1 to 10.
But I'll tell you what, like, if they were promoting some type of match leading out of this, like
Schultz and Wilson.
Yeah, Schultz versus Wilson or whatever, Thunderbolt Patterson versus the Ted Arcidi, I'm there, man. Like, this felt like an excellent addition of Piper's Pit or, like, you know, like a Flair for the Gold or something like that. You know what I mean? It just felt just like that because these are people playing, you know, exaggerated versions of themselves, trying to make you care about an issue that you probably wouldn't normally care about through really entertaining shouting matches and arguments. And I thought, you know, watching from that perspective, they did a great job. But it's not real life at all. Definitely doesn't feel
like
real
life. It's still entertaining.
Yeah.
Then Downey Jr., he does his zip it. We got a zip it out of him during this in this third segment. They bring out Captain Lou Albano, who calls this all utterly ridiculous, what is being discussed on this show. And he says... He says that today's wrestling shows a lot more showmanship, but it's still the best athletes. He mentions the likes of Bobo Brazil and Sweet Daddy Siki, mentions Bearcat Wright, all black professional wrestlers, and says about blade jobs, "If I had come home and had cut my forehead open, my wife would have left me." Maybe that's how they should have played up John Cena getting divorced, was after he did a blade job. Maybe his wife left him.
Made sure you had to specify blades.
I thought Lou Albano was horrendous on this show. He went to a new depth of just utter embarrassment to be watching.
Yes. Would you say so, though, at the time, if you're a viewer at the time?
I can't imagine people watching this and
even
being
80s.
Torn between who is credible on this show. I'm sorry. Lou Albano was just – he was ridiculous here.
Albano's agenda really was just to come on, yell as loud and as angry as possible.
And plug a hotline.
To overwhelm whatever arguments that his opponent had.
I hate stuff like this where it's just who can yell the loudest wins. It was just like, my God. But whatever. You know what you're getting yourself into when you sign up for a show like this. But Albano says that whenever he was beat it was because he fought a better man that night, and he only bled when he was thrown into cages, which was hilarious because Lou Albano did some bloodbaths in his day because he would be the manager that, you know, in his post-wrestling career where he would be bringing in the heel and would talk it up, and then when they really needed a big bump, it would be the time when the babyface would finally get their hands on Lou Albano, yeah. And he'd do like some big juice job, and he did some massive ones in his day.
Yeah. Again, I just find it so entertaining because, like, you know, in interviews where even people might try to stay in character, you know, over the past 20 years or something, they might be more subtle about it. This guy just straight up lies. There's no such thing as blades.
Just lying. Who cares? He explains, but he tries to explain it in that.
Yeah, he tries to make logic.
There's not fair matching. They overmatch them right now. They overmatch them. When a guy fights another guy, it's a big discrepancy of talent, and then the other wrestler will come in, and that is why I win.
Morton Downey asked Lou Albano straight up, do you know who wins the match before the match starts? Albano says he doesn't know of any pre-arrangement, but he'll admit to this phenomenon of overmatching, meaning... you know, putting George St. Pierre versus, I don't know, Facebook prelim fighter. So you know, you would...
We're never going to see Hulk Hogan face Ric Flair, for instance.
Yeah, no.
We would see that 2 years later.
So that's his comment.
Overmatching. And then the absolute... Listen, whenever we do interviews, plugs are a part of doing a lot of interviews. And some guys just fucking shoehorn them into an interview, and it's going to be really annoying. And... there is an art to segueing in, and never have I heard a greater segue than, if wrestling wasn't real, then how come over 100,000 people call into my hotline, 1-900-909-4-LOU, it is going to be open, myself and Dr. D, David Schultz, it's just absolute, no issue at all with just being a whore here for this hotline, 1-900-909-4-LOU.
Like I would
clearly, wrestling is real.
Yeah,
they're ordering his hotline.
It's just amazing. Like, I don't know. Like we've interviewed like a lot of wrestlers, and we've seen them like, you know, outside of their on camera personality. But like we see that, like, you know, talking to these people, asking them for interviews, what they're like. They're all, you know, kind of like normal. They're just, you know, like talking like you and I right now. But once the cameras come on, they just turn into completely different people. And that's what it felt like here with Lou Albano, just getting into character.
Yeah, so then Jim Wilson reads the quote that Vince McMahon gave to the Associated Press following his appearance in front of the New Jersey Commission about wrestling and saying if this stuff were real, there would be a lot more dead wrestlers. And
they just pile on him.
Oh, they Lou Albano, he's like...
Vince McMahon? Senior, Junior? I mean, come on.
Vince Senior was the greatest promoter ever. I am not a friend of Vince McMahon Junior, but what he was trying to say...
What is his explanation?
Oh.
His explanation is that, well, you know, like when wrestlers fight each other, obviously what Vince is trying to say is they don't want to use their full force because they might really kill each other if they hit each other too hard. So, yeah, they might just pull back.
That's what he meant.
People don't want to kill each other, obviously.
Glad we had his press secretary here to decipher this quote.
The most amazing thing is that it seemed like this audience in this Morton Downey Jr. show, they were cheering and buying all of this. Like I felt like I was an alien watching this. Like, you know, like I don't know where they got this audience from, because it felt like just bizarro world in that they're cheering all this bullshit.
Then we were introduced to Larry Sharp, who ran the Monster Factory training facility, and Wilson tries to explain trying to start a union with Patterson in the 70s, and this is where Albano was kind of torn, because Schultz is like, you want a handout? You want a handout? And he's supposed to be working with Albano here. They're in business together with the hotline, and Albano's like, well, for certain things like better medical conditions and pension plan, that stuff would be good, but not the way this guy's going about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like such hypocrites here at this point. And then Schultz just goes on this insane tangent. This, to me, was the most obvious worked spot of the show. To me, it was like, we're building up to the end of the show. He cuts this big, big promo and then tosses water into the face of Jim Wilson. 100% believe this was a worked spot.
What, between Wilson and Schultz?
Yes.
To what effect? To what reason?
I think for just maximum effect, they said, listen, I'm probably going to toss water at you at some point. I'll wait for the end. I don't know. I can't buy this as legit at all, what given became the
characters. I buy it. I buy that, you know, obviously... it was awesome.
Or
was
maybe they said, toss this water and maybe he'll throw a punch at you. That would be great.
Perhaps, yeah.
Anyway,
but
this,
instead,
this was
just sits
crazy.
There and takes it.
And he ends it after.
He was so awesome.
After he tosses the water at him, ends it with, I wish you would die.
It was so
horrible.
Awesome.
Sharp says that if there was a union in wrestling, Jim Wilson and Thunderbolt Patterson wouldn't even get into the business. I don't know how the fuck that works. And says that Atlas made $900 his first week.
Tony Atlas, who he apparently trained?
Yes, he says,
I was training Tony Atlas. His first week in wrestling, he made $900. I made four. He got pushed because he was black. You got pushed because you were black, and I was a better wrestler than you, which is reverse discrimination, and I didn't get the job because you were black.
That he was talking about Tony Atlas. The reason Tony Atlas made that money, it was because Tony Atlas was.
I was a victim of reverse discrimination because I was a better wrestler than Tony Atlas, and he made $900, and I didn't because I wasn't black.
Which received loud applause.
Jesus, it's hard to pull this guy's head out of his ass at this point. Sharp says that 1% of the trainees are black, and if they had more intestinal fortitude, they would try out for wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
They being black people.
Yep.
That was his thesis.
Well, you know, what was Thunderbolt Patterson's response to that?
Well, he brought up the name Jesse Jackson, which the studio audience booed.
Yes.
And then Schultz says that Thunderbolt Patterson is black and doesn't want to work. And Morton calls it bullshit. That's bullshit, indicting all black people. Morton Downey Jr. here coming to the defense of equality.
But Schultz comes back and says, well, I was watching basketball the other night, not one white man on the court. Even louder applause from this audience.
Fuck.
He's right.
So...
I mean, whatever the case was, whether or not these people are telling the truth or not, I just found it so entertaining as a back-and-forth argument, even if it was all bullshit.
Then they take fan questions, because that's what this show needed.
Oh, yeah.
The fans to speak. The
you
first guy is holding an American flag.
Yes.
He thinks Schultz would kick Wilson's ass, and Albano then talks about how wrestling has helped raise, like, $29 million for multiple sclerosis.
Okay, well, the question was to Jim Wilson, if you suffered these, this harassment so long ago, why did it take you so long to bring this up? And before he could even answer, Albano jumps in with this completely irrelevant stat. What does that have to do with anything? The fact that wrestling made so much money for multiple sclerosis.
Then they went to a guy wearing a wrestling mask and a Megadeth shirt, says he's been in wrestling school for a year and he's never been hit on by a promoter.
Yeah.
So Downey tells him, well, look in the mirror. That's why you're not being hit on. Look at yourself. Another fan says, Patterson quit. This was the guy who said, you walked away. You could have been the champion. And it just appeared that there were a bunch of indie workers that they filled out the seats with in this. So, like, they had guys dressed up in costumes and shit.
Yeah.
Guy wants to ask Albano, why doesn't Vegas take action for wrestling? And this is where Albano admits to the overmatching. And then he asks, why are all matches called exhibitions? Great answer.
He also says that, well, yeah, for the Andre match, Vegas had some odds, which I don't know if it was true.
They took odds for WrestleMania 29 and some
months.
Yeah,
it is true now. Yeah, so then, it must be real.
Then Wilson has this picture, a very famous picture of Jimmy Carter.
Like, what the hell was he trying to... What was the point of this?
Well, it was for some cute little line where...
Some metaphor.
Jimmy Carter is giving a headlock to Mr. Wrestling 2, Johnny Walker, and this is a famous picture, and he says, I am showing this picture because we are in the midst of unmasking the politics of pro wrestling.
Wow.
That was worse than any joke I have ever told.
This was his, like...
This is my high spot.
This is the ace up his sleeve. This is really going to convince all these people, this photo. This metaphor.
I get it now.
Oh,
the politics of wrestling with a politician and a wrestler.
Oh, my God.
Schultz says he is not prejudiced. He takes all people's items as a bounty hunter and says he's been blackballed, too. He's not complaining. And they all just shout and yell as Downey gives his final thought, saying, "Pro wrestling doesn't really matter if it's real or fake. At least the bad guys aren't killing anyone." After Schultz just challenged Jim Wilson to a fight on the street.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, like, we, you know,
the bounty hunter wants to fight a guy on the street.
I mean, you know, that statement, like that closing statement. First of all, what a closing statement. Well, the, you know, at least these people aren't killing anybody. But then again, you know, in the time that since this episode's air, we can make some tasteless references about how that's in that.
Oh, it was
man,
great.
what a train wreck of a show. What a I'm amazed that, you know, stuff like this even existed on TV. And
go watch like some Fox News segments. I
true.
Mean, dude,
yep.
this
stuff, this was definitely the precursor to all that.
This
stuff.
Is now politics is like the yeah. feature of most of these kinds of subjects.
But I would like to think that most people just, you know, treat that as, you know, as something as fake as pro wrestling. But I don't know. They probably did with this too. But, you know, like after watching this, you could tell why Morton Downey seemed so comfortable in that Piper's Pit segment, because he's a character that just seemed to fit right in into this whole world.
So that was the show. I would have preferred if this was a half hour. An hour was a little tough for me to get through at the end. It's just so much shouting, and it's funny for a while, and then it's like, okay.
I loved it, man. I wish the show was still on. Well, no, I don't. I'd probably get sick of it after a while. But, like, you know, for 45 minutes, I had a great time watching this.
I'll give this one a 5 out of 10.
I give this an 8.
Wow.
Yeah, this was great. You got to go out, more so than the Donahue special. I mean, they're all interesting. So if you can find that VHS tape on eBay, that Pollock.
No, just go on YouTube. Come on. You don't have to go
check
out, buy this. Let's be honest.
Highly recommended from me.
All right, Wei. So after this, quite the show here, this Morton Downey Jr. program, did you know that they were at some point making a documentary on this guy, and there was a trailer online?
Yeah, actually, I just became aware in the past 40
seconds.
Minutes. Yeah. I think it's already made. It looks like it was it debuted at the Tribeca Film Festival last year.
Oh, it's out.
No, not yet. I think it has an actual release in June of this year. So look out for that. It looks pretty good. Check out the trailer online.
It does look pretty interesting. Maybe we'll have to make a third Morton Downey Jr. subject on Review Away. Imagine that. We could really stretch this guy out.
Well, you know, watching this trailer, I mean, you really get the sense that this was a pro wrestler, like through and through. You know, they basically say, people on the documentary seem to say, you know, I didn't know if it was real or how much of it was staged. And clearly, you know, they're saying that he was nothing like his character that he portrayed on TV. So, I find it has many parallels to pro wrestling.
All right. We will now get into feedback. It's pretty short and sweet this week. Not too many people checking out Morton Downey Jr. But we start off with Trent, who says, "By 1989, exposing wrestling and saying that the matches are predetermined would come as a shock to approximately no one, except for about 100 people, all of whom just happened to be in the audience for the show. They were behind every asinine comment in regards to protecting kayfabe. Wrestling's most credible spokesman, Dr. D. David Schultz, never disappoints, and this appearance was no exception. As Jim Wilson is explaining the sexual advances made by promoters on him, Dr. D. immediately goes on the defensive and repeatedly shouts out such pertinent questions as, 'Are you gay? Did you kiss him? And did he say hooker instead of booker?' Then insists saying that he had never had any promoter want to make love to him because he always had plenty of women. To top it off, he even states that Wilson should go to the West Coast and hold hands with all of these promoters. The more Dr. D would spew homophobic remarks, the more rampant the audience would go. My other favorite moment was when Dr. D, who came off like a Klansman throughout this show, makes a final plea that he's not racist at all, saying that as a bounty hunter, he picks up criminals who are white, just like he picks up the black man, the Puerto Rican, Chinese, Japanese, I don't care. Can you imagine a better reality show than Dr. D, David Schultz, the bounty hunter? Me neither. Captain Lou's insistence on protecting the business on no shame for claiming that the reason that Vegas doesn't take bets on matches was because the promoters overmatch to make a passionate argument about how wrestling can't be fake because 150,000 people a month call his hotline. It seemed as though Captain Lou would die before breaking kayfabe. Easily a 10 out of 10.
We now go to, let's go to Matthew, who says, "Hi guys, long time listener, first time poster, Dr. Death and Dr. Death. I think he means Dr. D. Dr. D and Captain Lou had to be the... and would do or say anything to protect the business and not break kayfabe. I was waiting for David Schultz to knock out a few people like he did to that reporter that asked if wrestling was fake. Quality show that provided quite a bit of laughs. Cheers and keep up the good word for good work from Melbourne, Australia.
And we finish off... deep feedback this week, Way. Brian from Buffalo. I feel like a terrible person saying it was absolutely hilarious watching Jim Wilson get buried. Dr. D is as sensitive and caring as always with his plethora of homophobic slurs and questions. How come he wanted to rip Wilson's head off in the first segment, but then he sits down right next to him? Made me think this was a work of some sort. Paul E was a highlight. Was the intent of all these guys on the show to completely bury the business? Promoters are made to look like scumbags and wrestlers to look like idiots, especially when the world's strongest man guy said he was college educated. That said, at times this was so ridiculous I was waiting for these guys to start corpsing, especially while Captain Lou was talking, I mean yelling. At this point in time, was it not known that wrestling was predetermined? I've never heard of reverse discrimination, and to me the race card here sounded forced. I'd love to know whatever happened to Jim Wilson. Pollock Ting, do you know? The crowd questions were the worst. They all looked like plants, especially at the end of the show when it said, quote, certain audience members were invited by the producer. Overall, Downey Jr. came off looking like the biggest idiot out of all of them. Regardless, this was hilarious and highly entertaining, excellent choice, and the best review pick in a while. Well, Jim Wilson has since passed away, so Jim Wilson. And if you want more, check out his book, Chokehold, that came out about a decade ago. It's a very, very thorough and goes much more into the topics he was trying to discuss on this show. And that brings us an end, Way, to this particular show. But never stopping, we just continue to review and review and review. And next week, we're just getting off of WrestleMania, Way, where that was the focus for like all of March and going into April. But you know what? March was also synonymous with another event that WCW fans would know as Uncensored. And this is one of the most requested shows we have been asked to review that we never have. And that is the 96th edition of Uncensored, featuring a doomsday cage match where Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage took on the team known as the Alliance to End Hulkamania, consisting of Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, The Barbarian, Lex Luger, Ming, Kevin Sullivan, The Gangsta, and The Ultimate Solution.
Oh my God.
Are you ready for this?
I don't know. Yes, I am. Bring it on. The Alliance to End Hulkamania. Yeah, WCW.
WCW mid-90s. I was told over WrestleMania weekend that you guys got to review more WCW. There's so much classic stuff out there. So let's tackle this one.
Let's do it. I will do it, but I need people... I need you guys to watch it as well and leave some feedback because you guys, I'm sure, I want you guys to suffer with us, basically.
I think people will go through it for this one. I mean, we have quite a lot of requests to review this show, so should be fun next week. In the meantime, all of our shows from the past week are up. The Law from Sunday night, a three-hour WrestleMania 29 post-show featuring myself and Wei Ting in a hilarious phone-in. We have Review of Raw from Monday night and just an insane edition of Raw. That's also up. And then we'll be back later this week with Review and Impact as Nate Milton joins us to chat about Corpus Christi and this live edition of Impact that is coming up later this week. And of course, liveaudiowrestling.com is where you can go get all this stuff as well as subscribing on iTunes. But Wei, we need a song to get out of here. What best can you come up with to end off today's show?
Well, in my research, I've discovered that Morton Downey Jr. Is the son of a famous singer, and he himself tried to begin a musical career before his talk show success. So let's go to a song that he sang, actually, on the Arsenio Hall show.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, this was an appearance on the Arsenio Hall show, and I think what's funny, because like, the Arsenio Hall show ended up almost kind of replacing him in many markets. You know, it basically knocked his time slot back, and then soon enough basically replaced him as the successful talk show of the time. So I'm assuming this was just some type of later on performance, but let's hear that cigarette fueled voice of his sing live on the Arsenio Hall show as he goes out with "Hey There, Mr. Dealer."
All right. I don't know how Way found this song, but that's going to end things off. Give us a follow, Outlaw Radio, at Way0937, and we'll chat with you next week when Review Away goes uncensored.
Hey there, Mr. Dealer, drug pushing son, messing up the minds of the kids of America just to make your fat rich. You're the sleazebag of the country, the garbage of our land. The devil is a waiting just to welcome you to his eternal. We hope that you